Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is St. Louis on the Air.
Have an African-American talk to them, they will relate better and probably open up more, and I would know more about the experiences. It was jam-packed, and it was two-for-one. Whatever it was you drank, it was exactly a two-for-one drink.
It sounds dangerous in a very delicious way.
It was, and it was a blast, too.
So in this interview, the group actually breaks into the hustle and did not miss a step. Did you have to practice to get ready
to do this again? No. That's in me. That is instilled in me like the color of my skin.
I'm Sarah Fenske. As founder of the LGBT History Project, Stephen Lewis Brawley has spent years gathering oral histories. But his new project is something new, a video series that gets LGBTQ St. Louisans talking outside the formality of a sit-down interview and lets them tell their story their way. It's called In Our Voices, and the first episode recently dropped on Vimeo and the LGBT History Project website. It explores the legacy of the Zebra Lounge and the Hitching Post, two prominent LGBTQ spaces in Midtown St. Louis in the 1970s and 1980s. And joining us today with more information is Stephen Lewis Brawley. Steve, welcome back.
Great. Glad to be here. Appreciate it.
And we're also joined today by Craig Green. He's the co-host of that first episode of In Our Voices. Craig, welcome.
Hello. Thank you.
So, Steve, you've said the idea for this series stemmed from the question of how to tell someone else's story. What did you want to do differently from a traditional interview format like what we're doing right here, right now?
Sure, yes. You know, over the years, you know, you become sort of trained that this is how you do an oral history. It's more formal and structured, and I get that. We have great institutions here in St. Louis. The Missouri History Museum is doing great oral histories with their Gateway to Pride initiative, the State Historical Society, a lot of their archives are that way. But, you know, especially as a white guy, trying to reach out to the community and have different voices heard. So I've been kind of noodling around, how do we do this? So it's kind of a weird idea came. It's kind of like a flash mob idea. What if we gathered people in a common space with common experiences and just filmed them? And so Craig and I have been collaborating for a couple years. He hosted a Zebra Lounge reunion a couple years back and invited me to be part of that. So we became acquaintances. And so we got together during COVID and said, let's do this. And so we just set a date in August, and Craig and Candy, principal, decided we're going to do it this date. And they organized a group, and Tabor Film Productions came, and for 2 hours, we just sat back and filmed, and then Craig and Candy led this amazing reunion, and we just got it down to about a half hour of just people reminiscing and telling their story their way. So, you know, Craig can talk about the experience, but I think we're onto something.
So basically just get the right people together while a camera rolls and let it flow?
Yep. No directing. We didn't ask questions. There was no one. I wasn't behind the camera going, ask this, ask that. It was their event.
So Craig, when Steve first pitched you on this idea, were you a little skeptical about what you were being asked to do? This is brand new.
Oh, no, I was excited. I was exuberated. The thought of being a part of something so great and spectacular and off the chain wonderful was like a God's gift to me. It was an offer that I would not refuse, because it is important that the stories get told and to be part of history. Wow, how can you say no to that, you know?
Craig, how important was it to you to be able to tell your story yourself versus, say, having somebody like me sitting here just throwing questions at you?
Oh, that's history. That is very important. And when he brought it to me, he said just what he just said. I feel like it would be more important. important that the stories are told by the through the people, by the people. Say, for instance, the African American community have an African American talk to them. They will relate better and probably open up more, and I would know more about the experiences that we experienced, and I would know deeper questions to ask. So. And this is how I explain it to a lot of the guests that we have on the interviews as well. And that makes them feel even more super about Stephen, because this was a man that wanted the stories to be told authentically by the people and through the people, and not given some words given to a white person and interpreted in his words.
And Steve, did you come into this going, okay, Craig Green, he's a great guy, I'm going to start with him? Or did you come in going, there's these two bars that are really seminal, let's start with the bars, who would be the best person to lead this? What came first, the guest or the topic?
I would say the guest, in terms of having this idea and then getting to know Craig over the last couple of years and just, you know, being drawn to his personality and his enthusiasm. So when we met during COVID at Lafayette, I think we were in Lafayette Square and having coffee one morning, and I kind of told him about this, and he was like down the street with it. Okay, we could do this, we could do that. So I'm going, oh, okay. So we just set a date and said, we're going to do it. And we said, I think it was in August, it was hot. And we went, and Craig and Candy organized the group, and we just met up there. It was hot.
Yes.
Kind of that day,
yes,
wearing masks.
Very hot, yeah.
And we were down, and the building's gone now where the Zebra Lounge was. It's now a parking garage. And they showed up, we filmed, and it was just a blast.
So tell us about these two bars. This is the Zebra Lounge and the Hitching Post. What made them such a big deal to you?
Well, they were a place where the LGBT communities, African Americans, can go and be a community. It was a place for us to go. It gave us, like I say, that sense of community. Everyone knew each other. There were the older people with the younger people, and we just got together. And then the Hitching Post was across the street, which was predominantly a lesbian bar, and a lot of us knew each other anyway, so it gave us a place where we can go back and forth across the street. And like, if you get tired of being with the boys, you can go be with the girls. And if you got tired of being with the girls, you can be with the boys. And at some point, the boys and girls were together. So
that's perfect.
Craig worked there, so he has a unique perspective, because he actually worked at the Zebra. So
yes.
He wasn't just a patron; he worked there. So.
And was this a bar, sort of a classic bar? This was a nightclub.
It was a nightclub. We danced. It was more of a nightclub. Yeah, it was where we got to party. They had happy hours in the afternoon, and then they would have the dancing at night. You know, and a lot of times it would flow over. And one of the more popular events that they would have was the Saturday afternoon happy hours. It was 2-for-1, and it started at 4 o'clock and it ended at 8 o'clock. And it was jam-packed, and it was 2-for-1. Whatever it was you drank, it was exactly a 2-for-1 drink.
It sounds dangerous in a very delicious way.
It was, and it was a blast, too. So we would leave from there, and then we would also go, maybe someone would have card parties or something like that, and till it's time to go over to Faces. So.
And what was happening at Faces? That was the later night bar?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't talk about it on air.
Can't talk about that on public radio. Well, I will stand back.
but Craig, you know, it's important, and through Craig's introducing me to folks, they were preeminent in terms of their DJs here at the Zebra, and they were bringing in music that St. Louis didn't have.
Right,
so the DJs, Glenn Williams and
Ralph Drake, and
they were very innovative DJs. So they were bringing St. Louis music to St. Louis that wasn't here yet.
And I understand line dancing ended up being a thing at this club.
Yes, that was always, and each week we would come, different groups would come up with a different dance. So it was like you had to, if you didn't know this one, then you were like behind. So it was just a lot. It was a lot of that going on. Like I say, there was the South Side, there was the, not the bus stop, but even with the Electric Hustle, the Electric Slide. I remember the first time I saw that being performed in the straight bar. I went like, oh my God, oh. do they know what they're doing?
And did they? I imagine they might not have.
No. Because it's still going strong today. So, you know, so I take pride in the LGBT community spreading that dance to everybody.
So in this interview, the group actually breaks into the hustle and did not miss a step. Did you have to practice to get ready
to do this again? No. That's in me. That is instilled in me like the color of my skin.
So that makes for an amazing interview. I got to say, all my days hosting this radio show, I've never had people break into a line dance. Is this exactly what you were hoping for by doing this format?
It was like a dream the first time that it's like this was more than I could have envisioned, and it just hit the mark. And so I think now, of course, we've set the bar high. But, you know, Craig's been doing some amazing interviews that we'll be making into future episodes. So he's well on the way of new episodes. Last night we filmed the closing of JJ's Bar, and people told stories.
And for our listeners who don't know about JJ's Bar, what made that such a significant spot?
Well, I mean, there's the LGBT bars in St. Louis are dwindling. We're down to a handful now. We used to have, you know, lots. And so JJ's, it was the only large dance floor left in St. Louis in the LGBTQIA bar community, but it was one of the nation's premier leather bear bars, nationally known, internationally known. And so it was part of the community for 21 years. And so it was a sad night, but we wanted to, again, let people tell stories. We just let the camera roll. People told their stories. In a couple of weeks, Trinity Church is going to be having their dedication for the National Historic Registry for being an LGBTQI history site. So we'll be there again, just letting the camera roll, letting people tell stories. So, you know, it's just like we're in the background, and our job is to facilitate getting it out once it's produced. But Craig's already hit the ground running with a bunch of future episodes.
We're talking today to Stephen Lewis Brawley. He's the founder of the LGBT History Project. We're also joined by Craig Green, who's the co-host of the first episode of Steve's new project, which is called In Our Voices. You can find that on the LGBT History Project website. We also have a link on our website to that and the Vimeo version if you're interested in checking this out. And we're talking about the Zebra Lounge and just the loss of so many of these gay and lesbian bars throughout the city in general. What happened, Craig, to the Zebra Lounge?
Well, the Zebra had caught on fire. And
roughly when was this?
I think this was like in the late 80s or probably the early 90s. I believe it was probably like 92 or something like that.
And had it still been going strong up to the point where this fire
broke out? It was strong.
That had to have been heartbreaking. I mean, this was your community, your home.
It was. And it really kind of... It created a void. But by that time, you know, as one closes, another will open up. Because the happy hour, I think it was at nights. We started going to nights. But then the Spirits of St. Louis Social Club, they opened up a bar, and then which eventually became the Club 747. Then also the Alley had opened up during that time. So.
Sunrise, sunset.
Yes, yeah, exactly. As one door closes, two are open.
But Steve, I wonder about that today. We see the closing of so many of these spaces, and it seems now that the rest of the world is a bit more open to LGBTQ people, and maybe with also the rise of so many people being on apps, there's not as much of a need for those spaces, but it feels like a true loss for the community.
Yes, last night, they were just packed, people coming to say goodbye, and I heard that all night. Where will we go? Times have changed, you know, younger generation not understanding the need for people to come together to bond and have a brotherhood, sisterhood with one another, that there, it is a big generation gap. And so it's a sad one. It's just one of those sad instances we're living through history. And the other big cities, San Francisco, all of everyone's seeing a decline in bars.
It's not just St. Louis.
You know, gentrification comes in and, you know, they can't afford the rent. And then it's just a different world. So we're witnessing and documenting the history of this.
It seems like it's just a more closed world without those spaces. You have to be able to connect with somebody to find your group without necessarily having that common gathering ground. Was this something that was important to you as you were young and coming up to be able to just randomly meet people, not have to already have made arrangements?
It very much so. It was, like I was saying earlier, it gave me a place to go where I could meet people that was like me. And actually, I was able to find my mentors there. Whereas now there's a big divide in a lot of the age, the older with the younger, because we don't have a place where we can go and I guess a central place where everybody's gathered and we can see each other. And whereas a younger person can maybe see an older person and vice versa and say, hey, come go with me. But also I think one of the things that's happening with the gay bars is that the LGBT community is not so underground anymore. It's not so vilified. And people are opening up. So really there's not much of a bar that is a gay bar or a black gay bar or a whatever. It's kind of sort of inclusive. You kind of go in where you fit in.
So that seems like maybe the silver lining here, or that's one of the things we can look at as progress is moving the right way.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I started the project because I would like to talk to elders and hear those stories when I was younger and then realize that these stories were being captured. So I just hope that as we move forward, there are ways as Craig mentioned, this generation gap, for us to find ways for the younger community. And so maybe that's through community programming and other ways that, you know, we can do that outside of a bar. So I'm encouraged that we can find a way to fill that gap outside of a bar, but it's going to take some effort.
And so, Stephen, our final few moments here, I know you have big plans for this series. There's a lot you're working on. Any sense of when you'll be bringing on episode 2?
Episode 2 is being edited now. Craig, you want to tell us about
that? We have just a
that?
Few moments
okay,
here.
Okay, just real fast.
So this is a gentleman. His name is Rudy Nickens. He had a great deal to do with bringing in the Ryan White Foundation. And he owned
Sunshine Inn Restaurant.
Sunshine Inn Restaurant, yes. And how they did a lot of, they lent their space out to a lot of the organizations, like even Gay Pride, before it became the Gay Pride organization that it is today. So that's what's coming up right now. And it's very interesting because the project evolves, because we'll have a lot of different episodes coming in telling stories of people that had a lot of contributions to St. Louis.
Well, this sounds huge. So we want to encourage people, check out stlouislgbthistory.com. There is a link on our website, a link to that Vimeo. Craig Green, thank you so much for joining
My
us today.
Pleasure.
And also Stephen Lewis Brawley, founder of the LGBT History Project. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here. Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.